You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Screen Heroes. My name is Ray, and my voice did crack upon first introduction, so that's cool. I am joined by...
She's going through puberty.
Yeah.
It happens to all of us.
It does. Anyway, my two co-hosts are here, regular and handsome as always, Ryan.
Hi.
And Derek.
I thought you were saying like regular and like diet or something. I wasn't sure where
which
that was going.
Which one was diet, which one was regular?
I think we both know the answer to that.
Neither of us. None of us are diet
anything.
Sure.
Like, regular and plus ultra.
Yeah.
It's like classic and new.
There you go.
We go with the Cokes. We're more like Cokes, I think.
I'm regular plus extra cheese. That's me.
I'm more of a grilled onions guy.
Everybody loves
and
extra
cheese. And
you're bacon. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
You put us all together.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a pizza.
Fun fact, I once made Ryan an entire package of bacon as a snack for D&D session.
Yeah.
This was a few years ago, but yeah.
What are we doing? Fun. Who are we?
This is Screen Heroes, and this is the
Derek's
first time
we're starting a food podcast, we decided, so keep your eyes open for that, or your ears, I should say.
Shouldn't that be more of a web series, though? Don't you want people to see the food?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Is that like an Instagram thing?
You should call it the foodie booty.
The foodie booty.
What's a booty?
You'll just have to watch the show to find out.
Or listen to it.
Sure.
Depending on what format.
All right, guys.
That was a good intro. Strong.
So
best
tonight.
Intro ever.
Tonight we are discussing the 1999 movie Mystery Men, and I hope you'll be discussing it with us because it is hecka fun.
It's our 20th anniversary discussion of Mystery Men.
So not our 20th anniversary, Mystery Men's 20th anniversary.
Oh no, I'm only 20.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
I started losing my hair when I was 12.
Yeah. That tracks.
That tracks, yeah.
But you had a full beard at 8.
I did. It's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway.
His first chest hair was at 3.
And his first erection.
Oh, God. We don't know. We can't confirm that.
I didn't track that.
I mean, your mom took pictures. It's in your baby book. You know, she did the mom thing.
That's probably true.
Anyway, so let's talk news before we jump into our main segment.
Like we do. So, guys, you want to talk Dark Crystal?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Talk
out,
it.
What, 3 weeks?
August 30th. So,
like
yeah.
And next week, we're actually going to do kind of a rewatch discussion of the film in preparation for the show, even though the show is a prequel, but this will kind of help refresh.
And Rachel and Derek have promised that they're not only going to watch the movie, but they're also going to watch the hour and a half behind the scenes documentary.
You know, I can do it. Let's do it.
On the Blu-ray.
I'll do it. Let's make this happen. I'll watch
it. They're devoting double the time. So kudos to you two for that.
I'm the one who bought the Blu-ray when it first came out years ago. Like, I love that thing. So
yes, yeah. We are doing that. But the discussing the trailer itself, did both of you guys watch it?
Yeah.
I know you hadn't
watched
it.
We watched it together.
Okay.
I do a lot of trailer watching Tuesday evenings before the show.
Gotcha. That is fresh. That's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And this one just happened to come out today anyway. So.
Super convenient.
Impressions? Thoughts?
Absolutely gorgeous.
It's so pretty. Like there's the end of the trailer has so many flashes of things. It's hard to know everything without doing like a pause and frame by frame. But I mean, everything just looks so detailed. It looks so colorful and beautiful. And
nothing looks even mediocre. Like everything just looks really, really great.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting some really special things here, you know, because of the nature of the Dark Crystal film. It's not like they really had to put a ton of work into all these different Gelflings, but now there are many different Gelfling clans and they all look slightly different and they have each and every one of them represented here. So it's pretty fun to like pause the trailers and try to match up what clan is to what Gelfling. So that's really cool. We're seeing an increase of the environmental creatures as well.
which is gorgeous. And that's absolutely one thing that was great in the first movie, too, is like there's no scene without something in the background that's alive and moving, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's a little like bug scurrying on the ground or like a plant with 100 tendrils.
Yeah.
You know, there's always something. And a lot of the creatures, and I don't even know if they're creatures, plants, whatever, in this look very cool, too, mm-hmm. and very true to the original. I did get a complaint on Twitter from somebody. I don't know if you guys saw this. Agreed with me that the trailer looks good, but they said that the way that every puppeteer makes a puppet run, a humanoid puppet run with like the bouncy shoulders, said that bothered her a lot. I said I didn't mind that because that's the way it was in the original one, and so they were trying to be true to the source. And also that's kind of what I grew up with seeing.
I didn't even notice, to be honest.
It's probably because it's what you're used to. So yeah. You haven't really seen anything other than that.
There's a lot that can be explained, like practicality wise. That's just could be the easiest way to get puppets to run. And if you want to do it story wise, then that could just be how gravitational pull of the planet.
Less gravity than what we have. Yeah.
Exactly. So plenty of reasoning, really easy. That person just wants to nitpick. And honestly, if that's what keeps you from watching this beautiful series, it's, you don't deserve it anyway.
It's a very small gripe to have.
Exactly.
Like, the voices all seem pretty good. We didn't get to hear, you know, all of the amazing voice cast in this trailer, but mm-hmm. we did get to hear, you know, the at least the main one and a couple others.
Yeah.
They're definitely being secretive. Like, they're showing us that the production quality is very high.
This trailer showed more story, though. The other ones showed almost no story. It was literally all just like eye candy.
Yeah.
This one had at least, you know, narration by the main character, you know, so it was a little more story.
True. It feels like they're playing it kind of close to the vest. And maybe I don't know, maybe they just want it to be a secret. Maybe it's because anybody who's seen the movie knows how things end up. Yeah. And so they don't feel the need to have a lot of exposition in the trailer. But
that's the only apprehension I have going into this is that this series, depending on if they're planning a season two or not, this is gonna end in some sort of heartbreak.
Yeah.
And that's the main issue. Like, I'm gonna watch it, I'm gonna love it, I'm gonna prepare and make dark crystal themed foods. It's what I'm gonna do. Rock candy. Just a ton of rock candy.
And also you guys have to be in a bath while you're doing it. And then you just go, we're having a bath the whole time.
Yes.
And we're going to make some little crystal bats to hang from the ceiling.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll live stream us watching it from the bathtub.
You guys probably don't even remember that scene in the original, but when you guys rewatch it, it's going to stand out so much to you now. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on because we will be talking a lot of Dark Crystal next week. So
yes.
let's move on to the next topic. One small topic I'll just get out of the way here is today it was announced that CBS and Viacom are re-merging. They're merging back together. They split in 2002. And this is a big deal for a few different reasons. They have just billions of dollars in properties between the two of them, and the big piece is Star Trek. So when the company split, Viacom kept the movie rights to Star Trek, whereas CBS kept the television rights. So that's why Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard exist in what's known as the prime timeline, and the movies that we've had recently since 2009 exist in the Kelvin timeline, and it's a reboot and things look different and all that kind of stuff. So now that the rights are under one roof again, who knows what we may see. It means that theoretically, they could make prime timeline movies and they can make Kelvin timeline TV shows and have a lot of, you know, crisscross stuff there. So as a Trekkie, that's pretty cool. It's big news. Of course, as you know, all mergers result in some kinds of layoffs. From what I understand, those will mostly come from the administrative back office end of things because the rest of the productions are different enough that they'll need those people. But people who work in any other back office administrative areas, there could be some duplicated efforts that will end up with layoffs, which of course is sad. We don't ever want that, but that happened today. So there you go.
So talking about layoffs, Loot Crate is filing bankruptcy. Chapter 11.
Chapter 11. I don't So Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which means they're not closing. It's basically a total restructure, especially of debt and assets, to try and keep the company moving along. They laid off 50 people. They only have 60 left. So they laid off almost half of their workforce. And, you know, it's kind of big news. Loot Crate's tried over the years to diversify, and they've got, you know, video game specific boxes and anime specific boxes. But I guess...
I think the fad for subscription boxes that are blind boxes
it's
are
coming
just...
coming down. Yeah,
I think it's done.
Also, Loot Crate kind of, you know, when they first started, it was pretty cool. They had some good stuff, but then the value seemed to slowly kind of decline. That's why I stopped using
absolutely
their service. But
they started posting, after the box came out, they started posting the individual items for sale. So I started buying the stuff that only I wanted, and that's how I got some of my collectibles that I truly love, but I still haven't seen one full box where I was like, I need that whole thing. So.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely tried it out for a little while. Just like, you know, I tried out the Marvel Collector Corps and the DC.
Those definitely had more value, but still, every single box was not something I was interested in.
Well, back when I did Loot Crate when it first came out. And at that point, it was anything pop culture. It could have been anything. Whereas, you know, at least like the Marvel Collector Corps, it was at least Marvel. Right. So if you got that and you were mad that there was Marvel stuff in there, that's on you.
No, I,
you know, but,
I was mad that we got Morbius pops. And like, I want really cool special edition Captain America, like one costume he wore in one issue, or I want that kind of stuff. I don't want these C and D list characters. So, like,
it was a mix because we also got like the Flock Chewbacca and the Star Wars one, for example. And that one was pretty cool. There were cool ones, don't get me wrong, but yeah, you're right, it wasn't all the time, it wasn't every box. And yeah, so I guess we'll have to see what Loot Crate does to adjust at this point. I mean, it's one thing to cut costs, but at some point you have to generate revenue, so
yeah,
it's true.
All right, so moving on, let's talk Disney. There's Disney news.
There's always going to be Disney news, I feel like.
Yeah,
at this
point. I'll start off on a little bit lighter note. They had an auction for if you watch the Netflix shows, that, you know, they're all canceled, unfortunately, all the Netflix Marvel shows. They did an auction for a lot of the merchandise from those shows recently, and it's kind of got prop collectors in a tizzy because all the stuff went for insanely high prices for TV show props.
Right.
For example, the most expensive item in the lot was a season 2 Daredevil suit, full suit.
Cool.
With the cowl and everything?
A cowl, batons, or billy clubs, whatever. Yeah, went for $65,000. That was one of, like, six of the suits. The next two cheapest ones went for $55,000 each.
It's not as high as I anticipated, to be honest with you.
I think they were estimated at 30,000.
Oh, wow, really?
So that's a lot for TV show costumes.
Fair enough.
One of the showrunners was one of the ones, he tweeted about it. He's like, I just paid $55,000 for a Daredevil suit and it's going to go in my office. So that's kind of cool, I guess. Most of the stuff was Daredevil. There was a Luke Cage, the creation tub that he gets like injected in. And it didn't sell for some reason. I guess there was a reserve on it and it didn't get met. So that's kind of annoying.
That's kind of an odd, wasn't that fairly large?
Yeah, so where are you going to put something like that, you know?
Right.
I also would want, like, if anything from that scene, I want the tiara. Right. And, like, that's what I want.
Yeah, the fake tiara
and
gauntlets.
That was so great.
Would be cool, right?
That yeah. I don't want his bathtub. I want the tiara.
Well, you have to have room for these things, right? Yeah. Like, you know, the Daredevil suit, you put on a mannequin in a corner somewhere, or maybe you have it in some type of special shadow box style frame if you want, and you hang up the cowl. Like, that you can do, but, like, that tank is huge. It would take up most of this room, you know? So I think the average collector just doesn't purchase things that size.
Yeah
Most of the stuff that sold for high prices was Daredevil. There was this couple sets of billy clubs sold for, one of them sold for $10,500. You know, so that's not
too
bad.
A decent chunk of change off of this.
Misty Knight's arm also was unsold, which is interesting.
See, now that's something, if I had money, like, that's something
that one was estimated
really cool.
For $10,000 to $12,000.
Black one or a gold one?
The black and gold one, the Rand Industries
one.
Oh,
nice. Yeah.
See, because that's not very large. Like, that would go really nicely right here on the shelf, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. You know? You should pick that up. Lots of Daredevil helmets. They all sold for around 10 grand. Electric costume sold for $82.50. The Diamondback suit from season one of Luke Cage.
Oh, yeah.
Sold for $82.50. But the big surprise for me was the red Matt Murdock glasses. They were estimated at $1,500 to $2,500. They ended up selling for $8,000 for a set of glasses.
So, and nobody bought Misty's arm.
Right. The Nelson and Murdoch attorneys at law sign went for $8,000.
That's cool. I like
which
that.
Was like $5,000 more than what they estimated it. So, yeah, I mean, everything went for so much money.
Well, again, those last two are things that are very easy to put on display somewhere.
That's true.
Right? Anybody could put
I'd
that
I'd be so scared to break. Like, the glasses are just a small thing. Like,
well, you get a case for them.
$8,000 for a pair of glasses. Yeah, it's a lot for a pair of glasses. It's very iconic, though, and they are custom-made glasses. There's not going to be another set anywhere, so it's not like you can just order it from a sunglass manufacturer or something. You know, it's they're very specific, custom-made.
Though someone has gotten really close to the Tony Stark ones from Far From Home. Those have been floating around the internet, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Those seem more complicated, so probably. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
So, Derek, more Disney news.
Oh, man. So, Disney's basically going through the 20th Century Fox slate and slashing things that they don't feel confident about. And they're
Which is basically everything.
They're blaming Dark Phoenix's box office for this. And I don't really think that that's, first off, I don't think that that's like truthful at all.
I think that's a scapegoat.
Yeah. They're just using X-Men as a scapegoat. And, they're keeping Avatar, of course. They're keeping, apparently they're continuing the Planet of the Apes franchise, which, after War, I don't know what you would do next, honestly, but they're keeping that. They're keeping the Kingsman sequel. Basically, if it was in production, in filming before
Kingsman
or
prequel.
Yeah.
You said sequel.
I'm sorry. Prequel.
There is a sequel in development. Sorry.
The Kingsman. If the movie was in production, filming before the merger, during the merger, or whatever, it's going to come out at that point. But anything that was in pre-development type stages may not see the light of day. We may never see New Mutants because Disney seems to be unhappy with it.
That's really upsetting. Like I said earlier today, the concept and the three main actors that they have are pretty stellar. So, you know, I'm fairly confident that the three of us could have made this movie with the exact same resources and done a better job, but you know what the hell do I know?
Well, they just need to get over and hire us.
I mean, we have references,
but if Disney is unhappy with it, chances are that means it's just not very good.
Like, no, you're totally
right.
And
we all have kind of suspected that it wasn't very good for a while, but yeah, it's, I think I read something earlier today that said that it's contracted to go to theaters. Like, there's a contract for that, so it has to go to theaters. It's not going to just drop on Hulu unless they break that contract.
Every contract has some way out. It may just cost Disney money, but if they don't like it enough, they might be willing to spend that money.
It's possible.
You know, and put
they it- also could do the Inhumans thing. They drop it in theaters for a one night like Fathom event and then get rid of it or put it straight to Hulu.
That
like,
would depend on what the theater contract is.
Well, yeah,
usually
totally.
A certain number of theaters screens, for a certain amount of time. We don't know what those specifics
theaters
are.
Theaters can also just pull stuff if they're not doing well. So if they just meet in the middle and agree to like a one night showing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. This is a weird situation. This does not happen very often. This movie was supposed to come out like 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
And so they're still thinking about doing reshoots. And like the cast aren't children, but people still age. And so I'm not sure how you can do reshoots 2-3 years apart from each other and not have that be 2 or 3 years of time passing at the same time, you know?
The cast is also pretty frustrated. I know Maisie Williams, like, she gets asked about it quite often in interviews, and she's no longer emotionally invested in this film. She doesn't believe it's coming out anytime soon. They haven't told them anything. So it's not on their radar either. They're not doing any press for it. They don't know anything more than we do.
Pretty sad.
Mm-hmm. I will be honestly surprised if it actually gets a real theater release.
It's still on the schedule, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Disney's slashing most of the rest of the stuff that 20th Century Fox would have been working on, which is not surprising, I guess, but it is disappointing. You know, 20th Century Fox put out good content. Maybe it wasn't the X-Men movies that were the good content, but they still put out good material. And it's not like Disney's hurting for money. So for them to use half of 2019 as an excuse to just destroy the whole like back catalog of projects they're working on seems kind of shitty.
The biggest one for me is the Jojo Rabbit one. We didn't talk about that at all, but
it's a fun trailer.
It was a Fox Searchlight, which is their indie branch of Fox. Taika Waititi, who did Thor Ragnarok. This is the biggest movie. There's some other smaller ones. Hunt for the Wilder People.
What We Do in the Shadows.
He's doing a small indie movie about a kid who has an imaginary friend that is Hitler. And
so weird.
The whole thing takes place in the 40s. So, like, it's right before Hitler's whole, kind of before Holocaust. The war. Like, yeah. I'm sure it's during the Holocaust.
Well, because like the war was like
really 39 to 42.
So. No, but let's so. this is we'll
I'm also
on.
Including but, like battles and aftermath and things like that. You know, so
1945. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah. So yeah, getting back to the movie.
sorry guys.
It's rumored this movie is to just be frank about it, the movie is mocking Nazis
right.
And Hitler is a complete incompetent buffoon in the movie apparently. But apparently Disney executive screened it and at least one walked out because he was so uncomfortable halfway through, and that makes people nervous that the movie something might happen, it might not release or might be only released on Hulu or something like that.
And the thing is, like, The quote's really vague. Like, uncomfortable could mean so many different things.
Yeah.
And since it is satire, part of me wonders if the person was uncomfortable because the things that they were satiring are things that are hitting home for that particular person.
Here's where I can get you. It's satirizing.
Satirizing?
Yeah. Okay. So we're even.
That's a good word. We're even?
Yeah, we're even.
Oh, okay.
We are.
Anyway, maybe those things are really hitting home for this particular person, and that's why they're
uncomfortable. It does seem somewhat suspicious.
Right?
Like, art makes people uncomfortable sometimes.
Satire is supposed to.
Man, I could count on, like, all my digits how many movies I've sat through that have made me uncomfortable, but they stick with me, and, like, I don't regret ever seeing them. It's just, like, in the end, it's not for me. There are probably a lot of one-and-done movies, like, it doesn't have to be your favorite movie to release it. It will be somebody's favorite movie. So,
and it's an indie film, so the budget was probably virtually nothing. What have you got to lose by...
It was all spent on Scarlett Johansson.
It's already shown at film festivals.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to some extent, it's been released. So, I guess we're probably just talking about a wide release.
Wider, because, right? I mean, it's an indie film. It's not going to be released.
Well, right. Sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think at this point, Disney's just looking for any excuse they could find to just cancel 20th Century Fox projects, which again goes back to conversations we've had where this was really about just acquiring market share,
yeah,
and not actually about acquiring your Marvel characters. We can talk all we want about, oh, Wolverine's going to join the X-Men and Marvel may, and Disney
Wolverine's
may
already joined the X-Men.
Whatever. Yeah, like, I'm making, like, that's not the point that I'm trying to make.
No, I totally get it. You know, everybody is so excited about the stupid Fantastic Four. But first of all, those characters kind of suck on the big screen. They're best in comics. Just leave it alone. And second, it is about other art. It's about other things. Like, thousands of people were laid off. They lost their jobs because of this. And now we're crushing art. Without enough production studios to make these things happen, we don't see these wonderful ideas that people have. And
well, that's the market share thing.
Exactly.
That's the real point here, was that Disney wanted to encroach on the 30-40% market share in the movie industry. And they've now done that. And because they've done that, they can now do whatever the hell
and
they want.
And the TV industry, too, at this point. Because they also acquired, like, 3 different channels and
they did
Hulu.
Acquire a lot there.
But it's the not just that. Like, that includes print. Like, Disney also produces books and newspapers and comic books.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's everything. It's video games. Like,
But for the movie industry is more limited, though, right? You only have 52 release weeks. You're only going to release 2 to 3 major movies a week. So there's a much smaller sample size. And so if every single month Disney's releasing 2 of the movies that are coming out as big, heavy hitters or more, right? That's the world we're going to see now. And mm-hmm. that's why the Lion King live action remake is the highest grossing animated film of all time, which makes zero sense.
Yeah.
But Disney only has to compete with Disney now.
Right. That's exactly what it is. And that's a problem. Speaking of Disney competing only with themselves, they also released a bundle price for Disney Plus along with Hulu with ads and ESPN, which will only be $12.99. Coincidentally, the price of Netflix, which never occurred to Disney. That's actually what they said, is that they had not considered Netflix's price, which is another bold-faced lie. There's no way they were in a room and they went, well, what should we price this? Hey, let's not check anybody else in the field. That conversation did not happen.
Well, it's also getting closer and closer to like the cable packages that we all wanted to not be a part of. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good price, right? Like, it's sure. actually a better value than Netflix, probably. But I don't have any use for ESPN Plus. When I had cable, a lot of the sports channels were thrown in there. I didn't have any use for those. You know, it feels very strangely familiar in that sense.
I mean, for us, so we pay for Hulu without ads, and that's $12.99 a month.
That's the same thing I do, yeah.
Right? So, like, basically, we're getting Disney Plus thrown in for free.
And some ads.
And then we're going to get some ads, is really what it comes down to. So it probably is the best value on the market right now, but you're right, because it's, do you pay for the Disney Plus by itself just so you don't get the ESPN channels? Because then you're like spending extra money just to not have channels, and that doesn't make any sense. So
it's true.
Either way, you add up all the streaming services and it's very familiar of cable, and cable's gonna end up being the cheaper option. We'll all go back to cable here, or everyone will turn to torrenting again.
Like, well, I think what's very likely is there won't be cable soon, because all the major stations are now getting their own streaming services. So once HBO Max comes out, which is Warner Brothers, and NBC Universal's comes out, you know, and CBS already has their own, and ABC is part of Disney, and like, yeah, you know, you're not going to have any channels left that don't have a streaming service, and then there just won't be cable, and you'll just have to get the streaming services. You know, we may be a few years off from that. Maybe it's 5-7 years from now, but I don't think we're that far away from
cable. Then we're going to see a huge uptick in piracy again, just like we did in the mid-2000s.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's kind of depressing.
It's already kind of starting. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people, like, Amazon Prime isn't a great example, because a lot of people have Amazon Prime anyway for the mail service, but I know The Boys has been torrented quite a bit. It's very easy to find a torrent for that out there. You know, any new release on any streaming platform, be it Hulu, Netflix, Prime, DC Universe, it's very easy to find those shows. And there's a lot of people, if you ever get on a torrent site and look at the people that are seeding and leeching those program or those videos, it's a lot. So I people are already getting a little sick of it and starting to go that route.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, anything else we want to cover on news?
Not really. Let's talk Mystery Men.
Okay. Well, then we'll take a short break and we'll be right back to talk Mystery Men.
Hey, why play video games when you could watch people play video games? Why watch people play video games when you could listen to people talk about video games? Come rest your eyes and hands with the Gamer Heroes podcast. We'll cover the latest news in games, previews, reviews, and more coming your way every Wednesday morning. Come check us out as part of the Heroes Podcast Network at heroespodcasts.com, or find us on Spotify, iTunes, Spreaker, or, you know, other podcast places. Give us a listen to help you get through your busy day, or even just forget you left it playing in your headphones. We're cool with that too.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed that break. Had no idea we were back just yet.
It was a top quality break.
Yeah, I thought so.
Really good information I gained from that break.
I mean, maybe we didn't hear it, so.
Oh, I heard it.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was great.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so Mystery Men. Mystery Men came out in 1999, and it is about...
Great year for partying.
It was.
Yeah.
can't even. I'm gonna go.
So lots of crazy movies came out in 1999.
It's true. The Matrix,
Galaxy Quest, The Matrix, Star Wars, The Phantom Menace, Office Space, Bowfinger.
That's the Eddie Murphy, Steve Martin one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I had it on VHS.
Being John Malkovich was also 99. So, you know, weird range of movies in 1999. We closed out the 20th century in a very strange way.
Yep.
So.
And Mystery Men also came out.
Mystery Men. So about this weird ragtag group of cosplayers. I mean, superheroes.
Vigilantes.
It starts off with three characters and they end up growing their ranks to save Captain Amazing and fight the evil Casanova Frankenstein.
That's yep. right. Yep. And the Disco Boys.
And the Disco Boys.
So where do we start with this?
Right. So overall, first of all, it's been 20 years since this film. So did you guys see it in 1999?
So I saw it relatively soon after it came out.
Okay. So it might not have been in theaters, but.
Yeah, I didn't see it in theaters. I saw it on home video.
Okay.
So 2000 probably is when I actually saw it.
I saw it in theaters.
Cool.
And I've seen it every few years since then.
Really?
It's kind of been a classic for me, like one that I can always go back to and I know I'm going to enjoy it.
Has it changed for you at all as you've changed in age? Because obviously 20 years for us has been absolutely huge. It's the majority of our lifespan.
Not really. It's one of those things that feels comfortable. You know, I know what I'm getting from it. It's not like when I go back and watch a movie from 1984 or something and it's like, wow, what did I see in this movie?
Okay, that's
you know,
fair.
I've been able to...
You've held it in the same perspective.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
The perspective hasn't changed. Although, I get upon this rewatch, there were certain comparisons to current media that that were maybe more relevant.
That's fair.
Than they were when it came out. But
Derek, how about you? Has it changed or has you changed it?
Well, I really hadn't seen it in probably 15 years or so, give or take. And so I had forgotten large chunks of this movie. For example, I forgot that Champion City was like this future dystopian place. I didn't remember that because the scenes I really remembered were like all the recruitment thing at the guy's pool in the backyard and the junkyard. And
I didn't remember that it was an American-Japanese hybrid of a town. And, you know, Big Hero 6 came out 5-6 years ago and a ton of people were talking about like how futuristic that was for America and Japan to merge and San Fran, Tokyo. And nope, this one totally did it well before that. And, you know, Blade Runner did it before then. So
everyone's forgotten about this movie.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I forgot about a lot of details, I gotta say. Like, a lot of small little details in the background that serve to enrich the story, I forgot. I just remember that as a cool kid, I thought the bowler was the coolest. I wanted to grow up and be
Janine Garofalo. Was great. So, I'm surprised you haven't cosplayed that. Like, I've wanted to do Mr. Furious forever.
Well, I've always wanted to do the Shoveler.
Oh, yeah?
Here we go, guys.
I guess we gotta make
this
happen.
This is it,
but,
yeah.
I was telling Ray after we watched the movie that, so when this movie came out, shortly after, actually, no, that math actually works out. So around the time I first saw this movie, I was working in a bowling alley and they actually had a ball that looked like hers for sale. It was $99. And because I worked in a bowling alley, I could bowl basically for free. You just had to pay for the shoes, right? So I eyed that thing like every day, always wanting to buy it. And I never quite pulled the trigger. And then I see it in the movie again and I'd kind of forgotten about it. And it just brought back all those memories.
I bet it became a really good seller after that movie since this was so popular.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure.
I actually
Massive
feel like
success.
That bowling ball was probably wanted by the people
if
who
I
did see it.
If I was
going to
get a prop from this movie, that would be it. For
yeah,
sure. Yeah.
It's a really cool prop.
Yeah. I think one thing that's important about this movie is that at least for me, is, and I've realized it in my adult years, is that it came out way before its time.
Yep.
This movie, if it released with updated visuals and basically everything else the same, I feel like you could release that today and that would be a $300 or $400 million movie.
There wasn't that many special effects, too. You you change up the Captain Amazing death scene, and you change up a few of the weapons and the crazy like physics that they have, and it's a modern movie.
Yeah.
I truly believe that if it came out today, of course it still wouldn't be on Marvel's big hit list, but I feel like all the major podcasts and YouTube channels would be dedicated to talking about how funny and poignant this movie would be.
Yeah, like they are about The Boys currently.
Exactly. Right. I also feel like they might be able to go darker. Maybe Captain Amazing's death scene would be a little more graphic and less comedic.
I mean, it was pretty graphic once it was. Dead.
It was definitely a 90s movie.
Yeah.
From that standpoint.
Yeah.
So just real quick, we're talking about like it not being particularly popular.
It wasn't.
It made $33.4 million worldwide on a $68 million budget.
Easily killed a few careers. Like
it wasn't great, but the timing wasn't great either.
No.
So it came out the same weekend as The Sixth Sense, excuse me, and The Thomas Crown Affair and The Iron Giant. Blair Witch Project was still in theaters, and Runaway Bride and Deep Blue Sea, Inspector Gadget, American Pie, and The Phantom Menace.
Good lord, that's a lot of movies that are...
were all in theaters at the exact same time when this movie
intense.
Came out.
That's intense. Like, a lot of those movies we've discussed on the podcast before.
Yeah. So,
I mean, still waiting for a Deep Blue Sea episode, but...
Let's do it.
That has the most unnecessary death ever. And I'm not talking about Samuel L. Jackson's. His was great. I'm talking about the female scientist that for some reason offers herself up as chum when she was the smartest person in the group. Like, why?
Well, she wasn't why? The chef, so.
Exactly.
anyway.
Whatever. Mystery men.
So, yeah, I definitely think this movie was disadvantaged by the lack of social media at the time. Right, because word of mouth would have been massive for this.
Word of mouth is how Sixth Sense got to be popular. Nobody knew what to expect from a new director, and just based on the trailers alone, go watch the Sixth Sense trailers. It's not like they were really anything special. So once the big twist at the end that nobody saw coming was well known to people, and they were like, you have to go see this movie. Word of mouth really could have helped this movie, and it just wasn't there for it.
So, fun fact about the director of this movie. I don't know if you guys have heard this or not. He only did commercials before this movie. And then after this movie came out, there was an interview with the guy that played the inventor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't remember. He's a common name. I don't remember his name.
His name's Tom Waits, and he's actually a singer.
Tom Waits. And so he said that Tim Burton directed this movie, and there's been this huge conspiracy about it. That Tim Burton actually directed the movie, and that the name that they used for the director was a pen name, basically.
A pseudonym.
Yeah. And
that just also happened to be the name of a guy.
Yeah. Or they think that maybe that guy came in at the very end because Tim Burton wasn't happy with the way that it was turning out or something.
That is so weird, because now that I think about it, the cast does not reflect a 90s Tim Burton cast. He loves to use the same people. So that doesn't reflect it. But the visuals and the color palette, and it's so reminiscent of Beetlejuice and Batman.
Well, the fight sequences are very Batman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was going to bring that up later because stylistically it feels like a Batman movie. You know,
it's true.
From the 90s, that is. Obviously, not now. But I don't know. That seems so odd, though, because you're right. I looked him up. After watching the movie, because I really didn't know who had directed it, and I didn't recognize the name at all. And there's like, it's Kinka Usher, and there's not much there. I mean, you look at director, and there's a couple of Volvo commercials that are noted on here, and he did a few other things in the camera and electrical department. So, I mean, I suppose that's possible that that's the case.
Well, Wizard of Oz had four directors, but only one is allowed billing credit.
Sure, but do they all deny, the rest of them deny that they were a part of it?
Two of them did, yeah.
That they denied they were a part of it?
Yeah.
Interesting. That's so weird. I think it's odd that you can do that.
If you don't have credit, who's to say? Like, it's just a he said, she said at that point.
I mean, there should be employment records.
I mean, well, like, I mean, if you go back, there was a lot of behind the scenes footage, and they shot a lot of extra footage that had to be cut. But in that footage, you see a lot of the director in there talking to people, and so I'm not sure how accurate that theory is.
Well,
but in the shots and stuff, I can definitely see, if at the very least, some inspiration.
To get the Screen Directors Guild credit, you have to direct the majority of it. Even if it's just 51%, you still get the credit and nobody else does. That's why Bryan Singer still got credit from Bohemian Rhapsody. But so that could be, I don't know. Like, now that you say it, I see the similarities. I see it.
Yeah.
I don't usually buy into conspiracy theories about anything, but, you know.
There are, I mean, there is some stylistic things that add up for sure. But I just thought that was an interesting fact about the movie. I had no idea until I went and looked up something about the movie and saw that, and I followed the rabbit hole, and there was a big Reddit thread about it. And
it's weird. That's definitely weird. Because, I mean, there are a lot of similarities, but I mean, it feels like that era of a film, though, right? There's a lot of it stylistically that feels like Mars Attacks, even, right? Or,
which is also Tim Burton,
right? Edward Scissorhands.
So, I mean, it's maybe it's believable because it's just believable, right? There are so many commonalities.
When Tim Burton does color, he does bright, almost neon color, like almost to the point where it's really tacky and in your face. It's not realistic color palette.
He always wants his movies to be hard to look at,
basically.
Just in very extreme different ways.
They're either completely pitch black or bright colors.
That's his funny signature. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the movie, though, right? So we of course have Captain Amazing,
who's played by the wonderful Greg Kinnear, who is an underrated 90s actor, never really got his due, which he deserves. He's always in the shadow of Bill Paxton.
His character's suit, though, Captain Amazing's suit, is one of my favorite aspects of the movie, just on a personal level, because it's like a NASCAR suit, right? So he's got all of these sponsors, like Pepsi and stuff like that. And I love that, because, and I think this will tie into something you probably want to talk about, Ryan, is that, you know, this idea of, like, if the superheroes were real, if we really had them, of course,
they'd have corporate sponsorships.
Absolutely, yeah. They would, right? Whatever they would be, right? If the Flash was real, you know, Nike and Reebok would be trying to sign them, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, this is really, I think, the first time that concept is shown on screen.
Yeah.
Probably.
For superheroes. I mean, unless you want to count the Bat credit card in Batman and Robin.
I'm good.
I mean, I guess you could count that, because doesn't it have like a Visa symbol?
Never
on it or
leave
something?
Without the Bat Visa. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess maybe you could count that.
George Clooney actually says never leave home without it.
But this is the first movie where they're doing it to make a point.
Yes.
That isn't just a joke, right? It's supposed to make a point about what should a superhero be?
Yeah.
Right. And of course, he turns out to be just a total pompous jackass. And maybe he was a good superhero at one point, right? Because the whole point is he's gotten rid of all of the villains. There's nobody left. So an argument could be made that he was the best ever.
That's true. So something that I caught in this one that I hadn't really thought about much before is, does Captain Amazing even have any powers?
He never tends to use them.
He has a jetpack, right? So he can't fly. He isn't super strong, really.
He rides in a limo.
Is he just a good fighter?
Yeah, he's just a good fighter.
That's it.
I mean, I assume,
whereas, like, the Sphinx can chop guns in half with his mind.
I assume he's also very intelligent, too, to, like, have been able to stop all these villains over the years. He's probably, you know, a pretty smart guy. But, yeah, he seems to basically be Batman without gadgets.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough, because in the movie, the way he's portrayed is more like Superman, but he doesn't have any of the powers of Superman, really, other than the jetpack making him fly.
No, I mean, he's given kind of the smug face of Superman.
And the eye, like, glass removal line. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I guess that's true. That's very Clark Kent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that was clearly, that's what they were going for with that, but... I hadn't really thought about that before. I guess I just assumed that he had powers, but when I watched it this time, I was like, he doesn't really have any powers, does he? So I was comparing him kind of Homelander from The Boys, and Homelander has all the same powers as Superman, basically. But yeah, Captain Amazing, no powers really that you ever see.
Now, speaking of the Sphinx, though, I mean, I'm not really sure what his ability was, because he never does it again when they're in this giant battle at the castle. You know, he never uses that ability. So was he just really fast and he hit all the guns?
Either way, it's a superpower. A
rope or something? I don't really know. Like,
it's faster than the eye can comprehend, apparently, because you see the barrels of the guns break off. Like, there's a shot that shows them all.
Why wouldn't he do that again later?
Maybe he was trying to do a team building exercise and he didn't want to just take care of it. I did love the gun control stance in this movie, though. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Like, when they first pull guns on the heroes and they're like, huh, guns, that's your gimmick? You know, like, what are you going to do, shoot us? You know, it's like...
I do love that scene. It is really, because these are just regular guys, right? Like, they've really never been successful superheroes. And, you know, the shoveler, big time, like, he's got a whole family at home with kids and everything. I mean... You know, Furious seems like he's a loner, but the rest have family. Yeah. And here they are, like, laughing in the face of gangsters with guns, which shows that they're either really dumb or really, really brave. I'm not sure which.
Something that I've always loved about this movie, too, is the villains. Casanova Frankenstein, just a name alone, is a great, like, almost 80s villain name. Mm-hmm. But the Disco Boys, in the way that they dress, they commit to this life.
Yes,
their guns are like super showy.
The individual gangs at the end, so much fun.
Yeah.
And very satirical of comic book gangs.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And Casanova literally just fighting with his pinky. Like, that's his whole thing. that was great.
It's really sharp.
It's really sharp. Yeah. The scene where Captain Amazing is going into the Sphinx's house and he's like, why don't you disable that nano micro laser on your left foot? And then your drink stirrer that has the particle gas accelerator, can you please disarm that? And I love that. You know, it's like this guy knows him so well, mm-hmm. and he's not panicking at all, but you're so smart, Captain Amazing, and you don't think that maybe, you know, there might be something new.
You.
Yeah, like he didn't set this whole thing up.
That's my favorite part. Like, Lance goes in and he releases Casanova, his entire testimony is the reason this dude gets out, and then he is taken down by his own hubris within the first 30 minutes of the movie. I love that so much. That, like, no, you shouldn't just release a deadly terrorist.
He immediately blows up the asylum as soon as he gets back to his house.
Yeah, that doesn't really make any sense. There doesn't seem to be a reason for that.
I mean, he was there.
So?
And spent a lot of time there.
Maybe he hated it.
He hated it, clearly.
Like,
he needed to get Captain Amazing. Captain Amazing had to know who did it. And if it was just a random building, then would Captain Amazing know that it was him that did it? That's the way I've taken it. It's because he spent the time there. He just got released that day. Then he blows it up. You know, it makes it obvious that it's him. Captain Amazing is smart enough to put those two pieces together.
It's very obvious that Jeffrey Rush is the only, like, Oscar winner out of this whole group.
Good.
He is fantastic. He acts the shit out of this role that he easily could have just phoned in.
Yeah.
Though, to be fair, I really think William H. Macy does a good job, too, because the Shoveler gets the most range of any of the other heroes.
That's true.
Right? He's got the most going on. He's got the real family at home. He's got the wife who wants him to stop. He's got... Yeah,
who is a very strong black woman, which was really interesting to me.
Biracial family, you know, before it was an issue.
They don't make a big deal about it. Like, it's not even touched on, really, which is great.
The thing is, like, our complaints on the internet have completely hindered art to a huge degree, because we were able to just do that. And if you were angry, if it pissed you off, you turned it off and that was it. You didn't go yell or berate somebody, you know, unless it was Michael Keaton getting cast, and then
you had a letter writing campaign,
death threats to Warner Brothers.
That stuff still happened. We just didn't see it.
It was a smaller scale, and like, things had to be really angry and loud for people to take notice. Like, the Michael Keaton thing made it to the news. If somebody was mad about a biracial family in a Mystery Man movie, then, you know, they didn't
Guess it's hard to be controversial when no one sees the movie. I think it's part of the problem there.
There were a lot of really good performances in this movie, though. It wasn't,
I think so.
You know, even some of the smaller roles, like Pee Wee Herman's, you know, the spleen, he was great.
Hank Azaria, though.
Hank Azaria as the Blue Raja.
You know, I mean,
doesn't wear any blue, but
doesn't wear any blue.
If you know your history, it makes sense.
Right. Right.
But I mean, you know, he of course is a voice actor, right? He's the Simpsons, and
he is the Simpsons.
He's like he's most of the Simpsons. And you know, he gets to, you know, play around with voices a little bit, and
make
stuff
all
like
the fork
that.
Puns,
which are, I mean,
cutlery
you,
puns.
You guys know I love a pun.
Yeah.
Right. And so a movie like this is just filled with
one of my favorite parts of this film is they show the off hours and the fact that he is in his costume at
which is
home.
His son's hockey pads or something like that.
No,
oh,
that's
the shoveler.
Yeah,
was great, the interactions with his mom.
Yeah, but like he's in the mirror and he's like saying his one-liners, his puns, because that's a huge part of being a vigilante in this world is you have to have puns.
Yeah.
It's so great. Watching him practice was really fun, and like that opening fight scene, you know, where he throws the spoon, right? And then
that was a great scene. So you got good. To establish all the characters. In choreography, it was not a great fight scene, but in terms of like what you want out of a fight scene, it was a wonderful fight scene. You got great character progression without really much dialogue. You knew what every character was, what they were about, including Captain Amazing.
The Red Eyes was a brief introduction. You don't really get too much more than that, but it does solidify that there are multiple villains in this mm-hmm. city and that there are threats from, you know, big to small. Like, as weird as it was to see them robbing old folks, like, nowadays, if somebody went into an old folks' home and robs people of their glasses and dentures, like, that's a big deal. Medicare does not cover all that anymore, people. Like, that would literally break people's hearts.
But that was part of the point, though, is to give Captain Amazing his point later, which is that, like, there's nothing left to save.
Yeah.
Right? It's these petty little crimes that aren't going to get me any big deals. And then the woman brings up the Pepsi sponsorship being canceled, and like that's all he cares about now because there's no villains left and he needs his money then if he doesn't have anything else to do. So that was even part of the character building right there, was the fact that the location was what it was.
Well, if he doesn't have any income coming, you know, he's no longer billionaire Lance.
That's true.
Just poor guy Lance. Mm-hmm.
I did love that scene where Mr. Furious is like, he just takes his glasses off. He's like, no, because then he couldn't see. Like, and William H. Macy, like,
He sells it, right?
That's my tough line. He does such a good job in this. Like, he is that character so through and through. He delivers every line without any sense of you know, irony or disbelief. He kind of becomes the leader by the end of the movie, really.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, the Sphinx is kind of like being their mentor and all, but they're following the Shoveler.
Did you guys like Dane Cook's first introduction to movies?
I never liked Dane Cook ever in anything.
The Waffler.
So, when I first saw this, I saw it in 1989, shortly after.
You had no idea who Dane Cook was, because he wasn't a thing.
That's my favorite part about this movie. The more I watch it...
Doug Jones, also in that scene, which I only picked up on the last couple times I've
watched
it. Yeah.
Like, the more you spot people in the background who... careers have gone off and gained steam, and there's like, when I was a kid, I had no clue who Eddie Izzard was, and he's the leader of the Disco Boys. Yeah. So
I knew he was
great
in this role.
Yeah,
like, that's one thing I knew about him. He was my favorite of the Disco Boys for sure.
If the Waffler had been a main character, I'm not quite sure I would have been able to do it. But like, for those 30 seconds that he's talking, it's the most Dane Cook that's ever Dane Cooked in all of Dane Cook.
It is,
like,
yeah.
I just can't stand him, honestly.
So that didn't ruin the movie for you?
He's not in it long enough to ruin the movie, right? But it is a big reason why I don't like watching Waiting.
Yeah.
Because he's in it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, you had to have all these shitty heroes to get to the bowler, who was probably my favorite part of the movie. I thought she was great.
Ginian's awesome.
Well, she's
She's kind of an underrated actress from that time period. She doesn't really work anymore. The Truth About Cats and Dogs was a movie that she was
so
in that I watched
good.
When I was younger. And yeah, it's really good. It was, I think, the first rom-com that actually I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Having her was great. And I think that they could have, if anything, utilized her more. I would have liked to have seen her early on.
What's cool about her, she's really the first one you see that has some type of super ability of some kind.
Well, that's not true. The spleen. Like, I, as gross as his power is, so he has super flatulence, if you haven't seen the movie, as gross as it is, it does knock four people unconscious at least 25 feet away.
You're right, and then he does it with, like, the armored car later.
And he can, like, judge wind speed and, like...
Yeah.
Well, so, that may have just been practice.
Sure, but as, still, that's a skill.
His arrow can do that.
It's so. Super gross. It's totally gross. But it's a legit power. Like,
yeah, and he has a backstory. Yeah. Like,
he does
know.
Have a backstory. That's fair.
The Bowler, Spleen, Invisible Boy, and Sphinx are the only ones with powers.
Yeah.
So Invisible Boy, Kel Mitchell.
The only role he ever did other than Good Burger, I think.
Well, I really wish more he had had a better career, because I like Kel. I do. And in this movie, his character is just fun and innocent. And, like, most of the, like, the whole point is you don't really believe he has a power.
Right. And nobody does.
And then he gets to
save
the
day. He believes in himself.
Yeah.
And everybody else starts to believe in him, and he does it. Yeah.
Like, what kind of awesome message is that? You know?
It's a great message.
It's so great. Like, they want to leave. They don't believe him. And he still wants to stick around and help out in any way he can. And
he does. He creates the environment for the party. Like, he gives them suggestions, and when they follow it, they end up getting the Bowler afterwards. Yep. It's completely his deal. Mm-hmm. So he proves that he's useful to the team in more than one way.
Yep.
And he does actually have the power, so, you know, he's not just blowing smoke up their asses.
Another cool thing about this movie is the tank. That thing is awesome.
Oh, it's so cool.
It's a really cool, like, even if not in, like, a satirical superhero kind of way, like, that is a really, it kind of reminds me of the turtle van.
Yeah, I could see that.
But, like, way more armored. But, yeah, it's a really cool vehicle that doesn't exist, obviously, because this is a futuristic, like, right, dystopian city. But very cool. They did a really good job of the environmental storytelling in the movie, you know. Just from, like, that van, you learn about what kind of world they're living in based on the way it's designed and what its function is and things like that. But, yeah, I've always loved that van. I kind of wish they made, like, a toy of it, because I would buy it.
Oh, yeah.
That would be fun.
With a magnet that pops up. That'd be cool.
That would be cool. No, the van's great. The weapons are all super fun. The weapons that they get later in the movie, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're all non-lethal, but they all are super freaking clever, right? There's the gun that makes people, like...
The blamethrower?
Thank you. The blamethrower.
Oh,
that
I love
is the coolest freaking idea.
The clothes shrinking one?
Yeah.
Hilarious. Now, like... So this is one of the things I really don't like about the movie. Like, it still falls into 90s subjective tropes that aren't very good. Like, the only black people at the gang party are the rappers. So that...
Well, you have the disco boys. There's several disco boys in there that were black.
That's fair. That's fair.
Because they more were making fun of the other groups, like the frat boys are just a bunch of, like,
white boys. White, yeah.
Right. You know? No, you're
then,
totally right.
Then you have, like, the one Asian gang.
Yeah.
You have the Italian gangster guys. Like, those were really stereotypes.
But, like, they use such a clothes shrinking weapon on the women who are already,
like,
in skimpier outfits. Yeah. So, like,
and there's, like, a scene where coming. Mr. Furious is, like, staring at him.
Well, Invisible Boy and Spleen are, too. Like, they objectify them pretty hardcore.
My pants are getting tighter, whatever he says.
I guess when they explained that gun, my head just went, well, we know how they're going to use that later.
Yeah.
Like, I just knew that was what that was going to be.
Well, I mean, it does make some kind of sense, at least, because they're already wearing tight clothes.
It would have been
so
hilarious
be
on the Disco Boys to watch all their big, baggy bell bottoms get really tight
that's
on their
true.
Legs and, like,
that
become capris. That would have been hilarious.
Yeah, that's true.
Were skinny jeans a thing back in the 90s? I don't know.
The way the costume department would have had to play that off would have been a much better comedic point.
Well, that's
just
why
saying.
I like the blame thrower, because I think that's like a super clever concept that I've never seen anything like that in anything else. Right? Shrinking devices, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, like, that's a thing. But the blame thrower is so different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea that you just aim it at some people and they'll just start arguing with each other is such a cool idea.
And the tornado in a can was cool.
Yeah. I kind of was sad they didn't bring that back later.
Yeah.
I was, like, waiting for it because, you know, I had kind of forgotten about the climax of the movie. Like, at some point, someone's going to throw that out there. It doesn't happen.
No. I really wanted to see more weapons, because the way they were describing weapons and weapon technology throughout the whole film was hilarious. And like, that's why it's so bad this didn't get a sequel. I would have loved to see this whole world expanded upon and what the team can do now that it's actually a fully fledged team that trusts each other. It deserved a sequel.
Now, one of the other weapons, of course, is Casanova's big weapon that he's going to use to destroy the city. And the good guys accidentally use it on Captain Amazing.
Which was great, right? Like, what other movie does that, you know?
Those moments are like the real 90s moments, right? Because the special effects.
Yes.
I mean,
the special effects date the movie, but other than that.
Well, because the rest is mostly practical effects, so it looks fine.
It's fantastic miscommunication. He tells her to flip each toggle once.
And they spend like 5 minutes discussing this.
And she does it, but because he didn't see it, he has to tell her to do it again.
And he's being a giant prick about it. So at that point, she's probably like, all right, whatever.
Yes.
It's so good, though.
And then Blue Raja kills him.
And then Blue Raja kills him.
By doing exactly what he asked her to do.
It's true.
So good. And like, those types of dialogue scenes are some of my favorite things. Right? It's the character interactions that really grab me in a movie.
Well, even her interactions
and
with
Mr. Furious.
The bowling ball. You know, you never hear the bowling ball talk, but she obviously has a dialogue with the bowling ball. And like, the bowling ball saving the day was perfect. Mm-hmm.
One-sided conversations are always very difficult for the actor. So to sell that throughout a good chunk of the movie, that's a hard thing to do and have it be fun. And it creates a character. Like, by the end of the movie, the bowling ball is its own character.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I mean, some of that you kind of wonder, is the bowling ball really saying that to her, or is she using that as an excuse? Like, there's one point when they're just talking at a restaurant or something, and the bowling ball says some mean things about somebody, and you're like, I'm thinking that was probably just her saying that and blaming it on the bowling ball. That's great.
Maybe, but it just does so much on its own.
Yeah.
You know, that
it might not even talk to her, really. Like,
maybe not.
I think it adds a whole lot to the character. I love the idea that the bowling ball talks, but only she can hear it. Mm-hmm. And the team never, like, questions her. They never make her feel bad about it or crazy. They give each other some side glances, and then they let it go. They're like, okay, cool.
Well, she proves that the bowling ball is a thing. They're like, please join the team.
And so it is kind of interesting, because our three original characters are actually the only ones who don't have superpowers.
Yeah.
Everybody they recruit or end up teaming up with has a superpower of some kind. And, I mean, that's kind of interesting to think about, because these guys were doing it, what did they say it was, 12 years?
Yeah.
I think they had been like trying to fight crime and everything.
So, in all fairness, it does appear that Mr. Furious by the end has some sort of increased strength, because he's able to jump off of that balcony with Claire Forlani.
With the $6 million man soundtrack.
Without breaking his leg. So there is some increased strength. Now, is that super?
It's probably just adrenaline.
Is it? Yeah.
It's love.
It's love.
It's love.
Like the fifth dimension.
So it's exactly like that. That's exactly what it is. If you don't understand, ask Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Pass.
It's an Interstellar reference.
Derek hates everything about that movie.
No. The cinematography and the special effects are truly fantastic.
Oh, he hates everything that the linchpin is love.
The story is terrible. Anyway, what else about Mystery Men do you guys want?
Well, so is there anything about the movie that you don't like, especially upon rewatch?
There were parts where it felt like they were trying to, like, the actors were all fairly decent names around that time. Like, they felt like they needed to give a character more of something so that sometimes it felt like the actors were fighting a little bit for the spotlight in a scene.
That's fair.
But I mean, not really. Like, I kind of love this movie, and I've always have since it came out. So I don't really have any big complaints.
Yeah. I mean, if I was going to pick anything, I think it would honestly.
You can't pick Dane Cook.
No, it's not Dane Cook. It would probably be Ben Stiller's character, Furious, because he, it's like they wanted him to be the lead character, but he never quite is the lead character. They just give him more screen time. If that makes any sense, right? So he gets, you get to see his work, and he yells with his boss, and that's really there so they can get the truck later or the tank later or whatever, right? But he gets all this alone time. He's the one who gets the date with the girl who has, he has to save from Casanova at the end, and like, but that's developed so poorly. I can't even remember what her name is. And I remember everybody else's name.
I remember the actor's name. It's Claire Forlani, but
I don't remember the character's name.
I don't think he was supposed to be the leader. I think he was just supposed to be the main character.
Well, that's what I mean. The lead character.
Okay.
Not leader.
Gotcha.
The lead in the film.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But I guess
I didn't struggle with that as much.
It just didn't really work for me. Like, I preferred William H. Macy's scenes, the shoveler stuff. Sure. His character seemed just deeper and more interesting than just...
He had more to him. What was Mr. Fierce? He was just a ragey guy that liked this chick.
Well, I agree. And I think that's what the problem was. Probably the biggest star at the time was might have been Ben Stiller, and they were just giving him more screen time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about you, Ray?
I mean, like I said, it falls into some of the old 90s of subjective tropes here and there. And even though we've come like a very long way, it still feels like we've fallen back. It did some really cool things. Biracial family. Nobody commented on that. Nobody needed to point it out or anything.
And a strong black woman, too. She was like, I mean, she wasn't putting up with any shit.
Yeah, absolutely. But she was still there for her husband.
And her family, especially, too.
She had a multidimensional character. She was not there for arm candy. She wasn't there to be the sassy black woman trope. She wasn't there to just abandon her husband. Like, she was a full, fleshed-out character, and she had very little screen time compared to the rest of the story, but it was developed, and it was good. Mm-hmm. So... that's pretty great. Every character's storyline was different, so I really appreciated the mix in that. But
I mean, there's little things like Blue Raja's mom was a really good character. Like, she was just super supportive and caring and proud of her son. Invisible Boy, like, he was invisible in a very different sense. Like, nobody ever paid attention to him. Nobody ever noticed him.
Dad didn't. He walks into the house and he's like, "Dad, I'm going to my bedroom with three strange men. Like, if I ever have kids and they say that line to me, like, the fuck you are." Like,
but like, that showed like a different, you know, a different side of his character, what it means to be invisible, right?
Right.
More literal. You know, figurative, a more figurative sense than a literal sense.
And, absolutely.
So there's some really cool character moments in the movie that a lot of like the 90s action films missed and skipped over just for more.
That's
explosions.
Just it. This is an action movie that's very dialogue heavy. It's more along the lines of character development and pushing the story along than, you know, gratuitous action. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you're watching anything on the internet right now, you're seeing advertisements for The Boys, and we've talked about it a little bit, but once you have watched all of The Boys and then you go back and watch this movie, it becomes very clear that there was some inspiration taken from this movie. There had to have been, because there's so many similarities.
The comic book came out 3 years later, you said?
Two or three. It was 2002 or 2003 that The Boys comic book was initially published.
So it's very easy to just draw the line and say that Garth Ennis saw this movie, he saw quite a few others, and were like, yeah, I want to do what superheroes would really be like.
Well, and it's no secret that he actually hates superheroes.
Yeah.
So, you know, seeing a movie where the superhero, the only big superhero, dies in the first like 30 minutes.
And he's a giant dick.
He probably loved that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm sure that's where he got it from. But it's just interesting to me. And The Boys is very highly reviewed and is making Amazon a bunch of money. This did not make anybody money. You know, so it's
Amazon's having a good year between Good Omens and this. Like, both were really big hits for him.
But like, for The Boys, I think it is in my mind cemented that in 1999, he saw Mystery Men, and then in 2001, the Justice League cartoon premiered.
And then in 2002, he started writing.
2 years later, you know, he has The Boys.
Yeah.
I don't see that as a coincidence, honestly. You know, no more than Hunger Games author. She says she had never heard of Battle Royale.
Suzanne Collins.
Thank you. I've never heard of Battle Royale. I'm like, okay.
Right. You know? You just wrote a book about it.
You know, like,
if we can look at Shakespeare stuff and find all the different influences for his individual plays, then of course we can easily draw conclusions here.
Yeah, and I'm not faulting anybody.
Hamlet.
I'm not faulting anybody for it. Like, no. It's fine to take inspiration from it, but some of the similarities are very, very obvious.
Yeah.
Well, you look back at some of the 90s superhero films and you have your Batman and you have the last two. No, you have one Superman movie. I think the four was made in 90 or was that 80s?
I don't remember when 4 came out because the 4 is also like just terrible. It's got to be.
It is.
There's no way that's a 90s movie, is it?
It was like barely. But most of them, like it's really just the live action Batman movies and everything else was satire or playing off of it. Like you had Blank Man.
Yeah, which I actually like Blank
1987
Man.
1987 for the Quest.
Okay,
the Quest
so,
for Peace.
Yeah. So
I have Blank Man on DVD.
Yeah. So you just had a lot of satire of the superhero genre at that time, and now we have a bit of both.
Yeah, but now you have the superhero genre has kind of come into its own in film.
Yeah,
and so now when you release a satire, it's way more hard hitting when you're getting, you know, 3, 4, 5 superhero movies a year.
Well, sure.
You know, whereas back then we got one every 2 or 3 years maybe. So I don't know, for me that's why it's much more relevant now. It's invaded so much more of mainstream.
Well, by the early 2000s, it was a joke. Superheroes and good movies did not belong in the same sentence. So yeah. It was up to Sam Raimi and Bryan Singer at the time to prove that they did.
Yeah. I look at Captain Amazing and I look at Superman and you put the two together and that's Homelander.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
pretty much. I mean, really, Captain Amazing is pretty much Homelander.
Just with no powers.
With no powers, yeah. I mean, but he can fly.
Well, what, yeah, it's Homelander's personality and Superman's powers.
Right.
Like, that's exactly.
There you
go. And color scheme.
And yeah, and costume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us tonight. We're not really going to rate this movie because we all love it. And it wasn't like a first watch for us. But of course, if this is the first time you're watching Mystery Men, definitely tell us online. You can comment down below or you can hit us up on Twitter and let us know what you thought of the movie. Otherwise, you can reach us at heroespodcast.com. You can watch us on Twitch every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can follow us individually at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter. You can follow all of our individual shows as well. You can follow Ryan at Buster Props on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You can follow Derek at The Star Trek Dude, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And you can follow me, Ray, at Siren Ray on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That is so long, I need to just pre-record it and have it play.
We just need one of those like things that scrolls up the screen that has all of our...
The credits list, please. By the way, this is a really fun fact that I noticed in the comment or in the credits of Mystery Men. The opening song has vocals by Wil Wheaton. Just
true.
Just saying.
Also, was All-Star used in this movie before Shrek used it?
It was.
What year was Shrek?
Also 1999.
Oh, was it also 99?
But so was Rat Race, and that also used it. So
it's a big.
I think Mystery Men won the race on that one. It was the
probably.
First one to
well,
use
I
t- it.
I told Ray that song has only worked in 2 movies ever, and it's Mystery Men and Shrek. So.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, guys, we will catch you next week for our Dark Crystal rewatch.
Bye.
Goodbye.